Welcome to NPD Soundbites from ANPD, the Association for Nursing Professional Development.
This is the NPD Forecast. Your hosts, Jen Bodine and Jillian Russell, are nursing professional development specialists with years of dynamic NPD experience. Jen and Jill round out ANPD's Nursing Professional Development Practice Team and are your personal environmental scanning forecasters. This podcast series features topics that are relevant to the forecasting of future trends for NPD practice and discusses implications that you can apply to your daily practice.
Welcome, everyone, to the NPD Forecast. I'm Jillian Russell.
And I'm Jen Bodine. Today, we're going to explore virtual simulation and if approaches used in academia offer innovative solutions that NPD practitioners can adapt to meet professional development needs when face-to-face learning environments are not possible. Joining us today, we have Dr. Marie Gilbert. Marie has worked in healthcare for over 30 years and has extensive experience in both the clinical and academic environments. She was awarded a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing with first-class honors in nurses' studies from the Royal College of Nursing Institute in London, a Master's of Arts in Education from Fresno Pacific University, and a Doctor of Nursing Practice from California State University, the Northern California Consortium. She's currently the director of the Central California Center for Excellence in Nursing at California State University in Fresno. And the mission of the Central California Center for Excellence in Nursing is to advance nursing education, research, and clinical practice through collaboration with academic, clinical, and community partners. Her involvement in many different and distinct nursing and interprofessional organizations has broadened her reach and expanded her networking abilities across the country. As chair of the Society for Simulation and Healthcare Nursing Section, Marie collaborates with colleagues around the globe to identify best practices and increase the use of effective simulation in academic and clinical environments. Marie has written and lectured extensively and continues to conduct research. Her research interests include interprofessional education, assessment and evaluation, and healthcare simulation. Marie, welcome. We are so happy that you have agreed to do this podcast with us.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. So our new reality is such that COVID has essentially forced us to adapt to a virtual environment, including simulation activities. So we're looking at you to discuss how this is accomplished and what we as NPD practitioners can glean from our academic colleagues' expertise in simulation. And that's a word we use a lot in NPD, our academic partnerships. So this, when we were discussing doing this podcast, made perfect sense to me to have this discussion with you. So can you tell us a little bit about your experience with simulation in the clinical setting, as well as in the academic setting?
Sure, of course. So I was introduced to simulation probably about 15 years ago. So at that time, I was working at an organization that was focusing on competencies for sedation. So at that time, conscious sedation, moderate sedation was kind of was a big issue, and non-anesthesiologists were providing sedation. So we really were looking at how do we make sure that they're competent. The organization pulled in a team from somewhere else that was using simulation. So this was the first time I'd been exposed to simulation. And I was fortunate enough to actually watch one of the simulations that they ran. And anyone who's watched a well-run simulation can see immediately the value of this learning strategy. I didn't know the ins and outs. I didn't know the theory behind it. I didn't know what they did to make it happen. All I knew when I saw it was, wow, this is it. This is a no-brainer. This is what we should be doing in healthcare. It just made perfect sense. So I started to learn more about it, kind of informally, doing my day job, which was in NPD. And after about a year with some creativity, we started using simulation for nursing professional development. And we carried on, and I guess you get to that stage of being consciously incompetent. So I knew there was a lot I didn't know. And I kind of took a leap of faith. I left that job. Really, I guess it was an unpaid sabbatical. I just left to learn more. And I think that's when my formal training started. I'd had training with a vendor, but I started going to more formal education and attending the California Simulation Alliance workshops. And full disclosure, I'm currently a CSA faculty, but that was where my education started. Also around that time, I found a mentor, and that wasn't a conscious thing. One of the instructors was, and I clicked, and she was my go-to. So I would recommend the mentor for anyone. And then really after that, kind of serendipitously, I started working as a simulation coordinator at California State University, Fresno, and things just snowballed. I was moving in and out of academia and the clinical world at that time. And in 2016, I continued my formal education and did the National League for Nursing Sim Leader course, which great learning, great networking, and that continues today. And as Jen, as you've said, I'm actively involved with the Society for Simulation in Healthcare as the chair of the nursing section and other professional organizations. I think that's where we do a lot of our learning. I'm part of the research committee for INACSL, which is the International Nursing Association for Clinical Simulation and Learning, and also the research committee for the CSA. So I have to say that the simulation community is wonderful at sharing and collaboration. And I've had the opportunity to research, publish, and present kind of across the continuum of simulation, hospital-based simulation, simulation-based learning in academia and the clinic environment, interprofessional simulation, the use of simulation for assessment and evaluation, which is really an ongoing learning. And then simulation for beyond education. So this is something I think that's really lacking in the clinical environment. And Katie Waxman and I just actually did a study about hospital-based simulation that will be hopefully coming out in February. But looking at simulation beyond education, so for things like systems integration, systems testing, and error investigation.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I tapped you for this is because anyone who knows Marie Gilbert knows she doesn't do anything halfway. She does not just dabble in a topic. She dives deep. So I think you're going to have some really great things to talk to us about today. I'm very excited.
Marie, this is my first time meeting you virtually, and I'm excited to hear more about virtual simulation and the expertise that you have to lend to NPD practitioners. One thing that I'm incredibly passionate about is innovation and technology. And you mentioned it's been maybe 15 years since you've started your journey in simulation. I imagine the technology that you've seen advance over that time has been pretty significant. But I'm curious, what are some of the innovations or technology you're using in response to COVID limiting in-person simulation experiences?
So Joy, you make a great point that in 15 years, simulation has changed dramatically. And it's interesting in the simulation world, we really drive to reinforce that simulation is a methodology and not a technology. But technology often drives it. When simulation reemerged about 20 years ago, it was the high fidelity mannequins that kind of got people interested. So it's an interesting situation that we're in. So in regards to what's been happening with COVID, in March, when the pandemic first hit, obviously academic institutes were impacted immediately. Campuses closed, clinical sites could no longer take students for a variety of reasons, which was understandable when we didn't really know what was coming. There was concerns about PPE, would there be enough? The concerns about bringing in students that could be super spreaders. So there was a lot of unknowns at that time. So we understood why clinical sites couldn't accept students. that meant faculty really had to shift rapidly to online learning. And, you know, as you said, virtual simulation, screen-based simulation, it has been around for a while. It's probably just looking in the literature, obviously someone's going to call me on this, but I would say around 2005, 2009, there was a blip in the literature about online virtual simulation. And it kind of all quieted down until 2020, when through this pandemic, we have been forced to do it. And I think that's actually a silver lining in many ways. So we moved rapidly to screen-based simulations, and simulationists across the country were sharing resources, vendors were offering free access to the product. It was really overwhelming. And meanwhile, there was no pause button. The classes continued. So as can be expected, the immediate increase was in screen-based simulation. So this is generally a commercial product that creates an online virtual environment. So a student can go in individually and complete a scenario interacting with a avatar of sorts, either verbally or using written commands. There's also been an increase in the use of video vignettes. So again, some of these activities probably were occurring before, and they've been adapted to the online environment. So there are some commercial and also some free resources that use a video vignette, and it pauses at certain times and the student has to answer a question, and then that video will take them down the pathway depending on how they reacted. So obviously that can be used individually by a student, or it can be used as a group with an instructor facilitating the discussion. What happened pretty quickly in both the academic and the clinical setting was then that educators were starting to develop their own video vignettes and, you know, sometimes maybe embedding errors in them and using that as the activity, really. So it was an observational activity and then having an opportunity to have that in-depth discussion via Zoom. Other things that I'm aware of that's been happening kind of in the virtual environment in both clinical and the academic is where a simulation is being facilitated live. So it's real time and you either have two students in the simulation lab that are being observed by the rest of the group and then they all come together for the virtual debrief, or you actually have an educator or a faculty member in the simulation lab being directed by the students at home. So you'd have Zoom set up and you'd have the students watch. And then when something happens, the faculty wouldn't do anything unless they were told by the students. So again, very creative work that's been going on. One of the most exciting things we've done at Fresno State this semester was using standardized participants, so standardized patients, through Zoom. So we did simulations. I have some experience with SPs, but not in a nursing program and definitely not over Zoom. So we kind of went to an expert, we went to a vendor, and we developed scenarios for first semester students in fundamentals. So these are students that really have had very limited contact. And then another scenario for third semester students in maternal health, particularly challenging conversations. So each scenario included, the good thing of doing this is you can create these personalities with cultural and local significance. So we actually, our maternal scenario involved a pregnant lady, obviously, who was attending a prenatal visit, but only because she had been to the ER with some bleeding and they'd referred her for some prenatal. She'd had no prenatal care for this pregnancy. She'd also had a previous pregnancy where the child was taken into foster care and she was a substance use she had substance use disorder. Really difficult conversation to have. So we were able to put the students in this safe environment where they could have these challenging conversations. And the way that we ran it was a start-stop method. So one student would have an interaction, there would be a freeze frame. Every student switched their cameras off when the one student was having the interaction. And then when they came back, everyone put their cameras on, they had a brief discussion, and then the next student took over. So every student had an interaction. And then at the end, the most valuable part of this simulation, I think, was the patient gave every individual student feedback as in the format of, when you said this, the patient felt that. So it was really powerful. And I think that's something we will continue even after the pandemic, whether we do it virtually or whether we do it face to face. So I hope that answered your question. It was quite a long-winded answer.
No, that's great, Marie. And actually, it ties in nicely with my second question. The element of realism in simulation is obviously incredibly important. But in the online environment, are there key strategies that you could share or pull from? Even some of the examples that you just shared, I see elements of realism in what you just explained, but are there other strategies to create that realistic simulation environment in the online world? But then also, what are some of the key challenges?
So Jill, that's a great question. Thank you. And I think it brings us back to basics. So simulation is a methodology regardless of the environment that you do. And it's important to follow a standardized approach. So it's very easy when we're stressed and we know we have a time crunch, and we have to get something out virtually just to focus on that activity. And I think that's where we potentially lose some of the realism. So as with all education frameworks, you go back to the basics. What is the purpose and what is the learning outcome? You need to consider that when you're thinking of the virtual world. So, for example, communication scenarios in a virtual world, I would say, are very challenging to create in an on-screen scenario where you're having to type in a conversation with a patient. So if your purpose is to promote communication, there needs to be some interaction. So I think, you know, you go back to what is the purpose of this simulation and what are our learning outcomes? And then when you do that, then you can start thinking about your simulation activity. So once you've decided the why you're doing this, that's when you start considering the modality. And you would do that whether you were in a pandemic or not in a pandemic. The creativity has come and thrived during the pandemic because a lot of those modalities, a lot of those things that we're used to doing the face-to-face, you know, maybe that's made us lazy because that's our go-to. It's, you know, we get together and we'll do a face-to-face. So you have to connect your modality to your outcomes. And then you have a starting point and an end point, and then you design the activities. So the key thing, I think even more so with the online, is to do a dry run. Once you've developed it, once you've established it, once you think you know what you're doing, do a dry run. And that's best practice for all simulations, but particularly for online, because now you have the additional concern around, will the technology work? Does it pan out as I was expecting it to? And we did that with our SP simulations this semester, and it was really valuable. We actually tweaked the scenario somewhat. The way that we prepared the character didn't help us meet the learning outcomes. So it really was valuable. And it gave me confidence that it worked through Zoom. The people we were working with were confident, but myself and the sim coordinator were like, I don't know how this is going to work. I don't know this freeze frame, start, stop. How do we? So it was a really good. Then I think is where the challenges start. So now we've developed this scenario, best practices, and we're confident that we're going to meet the learning outcome. And I think in the online world, that's really where the challenges come. And I say that because, as we know, in simulation-based learning, you need to have a pre-brief and a debrief. And facilitating pre-briefs and debriefs through virtual conferencing causes unique challenges. So many aspects of in-person debriefing and pre-briefing translate poorly. For example, the use of body language, the use of body positioning. It's really difficult to do that virtually. And there are also some other concerns around the learner's environment, distractions. So that is really where the challenges are. And that's where most of the learning is happening currently as we talk. I know when we initially went to the online world, as an experienced facilitator, I was just curious. I was like, how are we going to do this? How is this going to work? And again, realizing how much we rely on the face-to-face to engage the learner. So one of the things that we did, as I said, my concern was suddenly we were having clinical faculty that were doing virtual simulations and in replace of clinical, and they've never done simulation in their life. So one just-in-time resource we developed at Fresno State was a lesson plan template for online and virtual simulations. And initially, we did get some pushback because a lot of the simulations we were using were vendor simulations, and they're kind of self-contained. So they have an introduction and they have feedback. So the learner can go in there and kind of pretty self-contained, know what they have to do, do it, and then get immediate feedback. However, we really felt it was important to stay connected with the student, especially during this time, and engage them in dialogue about the patient interaction they had, even though it was a screen-based encounter. So we encouraged that there was collective debriefing done over Zoom. And the template had all of the phases. So we were helping faculty, and we were helping our program as well, make sure that the simulations we were using were mapping to outcomes and program outcomes. We weren't just doing simulation to make up the hours. It had to map to your learning outcomes and your program outcomes. So that was included in the template. Some pre-briefing scripted questions and debriefing scripted prompts were included. So it was a good starting point, but we still are learning kind of every day around this. So we know the pre-brief sets up a psychologically safe learning environment, and the debrief engages learning. And the standard for best practice in debrief is it's to conduct it in an environment that is conducive to learning and supports confidentiality, trust, and open communication. And I think, you know, we all know any Zoom conferencing we've done, you may not be in the room on your own. You may have family around you. People you're talking to may not want to disclose things, not knowing who else is there. In a live simulation, you're in one self-contained room. So that is really challenging. And simulationists, as I said, they're on this already. They're rapidly exploring solutions. And there's a very recently published article in Advances in Simulation by Adam Chang and a team of very well-respected simulation experts that are proposing the use of communities of inquiry as a conceptual framework. So it's a really interesting framework that's been used in education, and they're taking that and proposing that it's a good framework for us to consider using in virtual. And I'll definitely get that full reference for you to share. But it really does address some of these challenges and where research needs to occur to find the best practices.
So Marie, you spoke about objectives and outcomes in your previous answer. And I think that's so important because we should never do something just for the sake of doing it. We're always focused on what are the outcomes? Why are we doing this? What are we hoping to achieve? So would you say that you would have to take different considerations with objectives and outcomes and use different strategies than you would during an in-person simulation experience when you're doing a virtual experience?
I think your question about outcomes, and as I said, one area of research I'm interested in is assessment and evaluation. And the more I learn, the more I realize I just don't know. I think with it goes back to what we've just been talking about, that you should be using your virtual simulations for appropriate outcomes. And these, so that is your consideration before you develop your simulation. What is the outcome? Is this something we can do virtually? And I think that's important, rather than, we're going to teach something else. We're going to teach the same thing, but assess it differently. I think you need to make sure your assessment method is assessing the outcome that you're trying to achieve. So we're all familiar with the Kirkpatrick model, and there are a couple of areas on this model that has been interesting for us this semester. So for me, particularly at the level one, the student's reaction, this is something in simulation I probably don't focus on too much, because there's a huge body of evidence that shows that students enjoy it and they find it beneficial. However, with this rapid transition to the online virtual environment, we can learn a lot about the student's experience by asking them. We all know, I know when I first started, you spend hours putting this simulation together and then you run it and the students don't react how you want. And the only way you're going to improve is by getting that feedback and understanding what was it in the simulation that made the student feel like this, and then change that. So as we're using this virtual world more, we need to go back maybe more to a more novice in instructional designer. This is a new technique that we're using, and we need to be humble and learn from our mistakes. So I think the reaction from the students is really important. The other area, particularly in nursing programs, and this may be a similar experience for MPD, is how do you assess skills? How do you assess those motor skills? So again, this is something, if you can't assess it, then you're kind of wasting everyone's time by trying to teach it virtually. So at Fresno State, we were able to bring students back onto campus to do these skills. And we were able to use multiple classrooms so we could social distance the students, and they were able to practice and demonstrate their skills on campus. However, not all programs were that fortunate, and many had to teach skills and have students practice skills at home. So the way that they did that, there is actually now commercial skill kits that you can buy. And they comprise of various wounds and orifices and such that the student can practice certain skills. And other universities have actually developed their own kits that students were able to pick these kits up and take them home and practice and then demonstrate their skills. And then there's the probably most common used is the assessment skills. So again, some programs are doing screen-based assessments of students assessing a family member. So again, that's been used previously, but the development of these skill kits was something I'm sure has happened because of the pandemic. But I will just bring one thing that, again, I keep talking about the silver lining of the pandemic. The challenges with skills, teaching skills, and the limited time on campus, it has made many of us in the academic world and hopefully in the clinical world actually ask what skills are essential. And what skills do we need to teach to the level of mastery? And how would that help transition to practice if we focused on those key skills to mastery? And that's a whole discussion for another podcast. But I think that has brought that question to the surface. It's been around for a long time. We found an article back in the 80s about what are essential skills. we're still asking that same question. So I think this challenge has led us to kind of revisit that question.
Marie, as we start to close out today, what it's all about for us as NPD practitioners is really applying this to our practice environment. And you shared some great examples of translation to the clinical environment. But are there any other final thoughts that you have as far as how we as NPD practitioners can translate this to the clinical environment that we so often find ourselves in?
So yeah, hopefully one of the key messages I've been able to share is that simulation-based learning has a clear framework, clear standards, regardless of the environment. And so NPD practitioners who are familiar with these continue doing that and become creative with the actual activity. And if you're not familiar or you need to kind of brush up on that, then they're available online on the ENACSL website. So do look them up, because the way that you develop it will create much more success. With that said, as we've discussed, there's still a lot of questions and a lot of research happening. So stay informed, review journals, watch webinars. And I think as we've talked a lot about networking, I get a lot of my real, I try to keep up to date with journals, but you can't, there are so many journals out there that you just can't. So broaden your network and share. People are always sharing, hey, have you seen this great article? I'm like, no, that's wonderful. And then I share it on. So really keep engaged with what's happening. Things are changing, I think, daily on best practices. In regards to actual simulation activities, I'm aware there's a lot of things that are going on in academia and clinical practice that is the same. For example, the creation of videos. I have a colleague who is using them for their transition to practice. They created their own videos and are using that methodology. The use of simulation where the learners remotely guide the participant. So that could be a student, it could be a clinician, maybe have some new grads that are working with their mentor. I mean, wow, that would be interesting. It would allow the mentor to really get an understanding of where the new hires, the orientees, knowledge base is. It could be faculty or it could be an NPD practitioner that's actually in the simulation lab being remotely controlled, so to speak. And again, I have colleagues in NPD practitioner colleagues that are doing that. And then the use of escape rooms. And I did see that you have some things coming up on escape rooms. That is moving into the virtual world as well. So as I said, the pandemic, it's presented many challenges, but I think the benefit has been that we're doing things that we never thought possible or that we weren't allowed to do because we kept hitting resistance. That, oh, you can't do that. It's too expensive. People are finding very inexpensive and often free. We all know that in academia and clinical practice, there isn't much money, solutions to these problems. So, and we're making it work. I think the innovation and creativity that's happening now is going to continue and thrive even beyond the pandemic. So again, I hope that answers your question.
That's great, Marie. Do you have any additional resources that you would recommend for NPD practitioners who are looking to explore virtual simulation?
So I definitely recommend reviewing the Adam Cheng article, and I will get that resource to you. Keep in touch with all of the professional organizations. I know AMPD are doing a lot of work on this. In regards to simulation, SSH are frequently have webinars on this. So keep an eye out for that. And I will try and get a list for you. There are some fabulous things that are coming out that translates to simulation. Translates to the virtual world. So as we're talking about the challenges with pre-brief and debrief, there's a fabulous article that has just come out about the essential components of pre-brief. So, you know, if you're fairly new to simulation, something like that will help you. virtually or in person. So I will get those resources for you. There are many, and as I said, they're coming out weekly. If anyone wants to contact me, I'm happy to answer any questions or anything directly as well.
Perfect. Then we'll make sure that we put your information on our discussion forum for our listeners. Thank you so much for joining us, Marie. Our listeners, they're going to gain so much from this information you've given us today. Listeners, for the resources pertaining to virtual simulation, take a look at JMPD's Interprofessional Learning Environment column by Mary Holschneider and Dr. Chan Park. SSH is also a very valuable resource. It seeks to improve the performance and reduce errors in patient care through the use of simulation. And Axel, which you heard Marie mention during her talk today, is a great community of educators, clinical partners, researchers, and industry experts, and they collaborate to further the science of simulation. On April 14th, 2021, KT Waxman will be presenting a webinar discussing virtual simulation. And we also have a webinar available called Can You Escape? You heard Marie discuss escape rooms or mention escape rooms briefly. So please tune into the Can You Escape virtually webinar, which will be available as a recording through December 2nd of 2023. And look out for information about the SimWars competition the AMPD will be hosting at the 2021 convention, where Marie will be one of our judges for the debriefing sessions. If you have any other questions or comments regarding virtual simulation, please post on this thread in the podcast discussion forum. You can access this through the Tools and Resources tab at www.ampd.org and choose the podcast forum, and you will see this episode's topic. You can also listen to our podcast series by subscribing to the NPD Forecast on the AMPD website, on the podcast page, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. Thank you.
This NPD Forecast series analyzes information gathered through environmental scanning. Our goal at AMPD is to be your leading resource for NPD practice. We would love to hear from you and encourage you to post podcast topic recommendations in the podcast discussion forum available on our website.
Thanks for listening. For more information, visit our website at anpd.org.